Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program. Hi there, and welcome to Sunday night on ABC Local Radio. Well, whilst the immediate future of the same-sex marriage debate remains hostage to Parliament, those advocating in favour of change have not retired to the sidelines. Usually the debate is defined in tabloid terms as the progressive left versus the conservative right. Whilst in the press this is very much the way the editorial pages play it, there are subtleties to the argument, particularly within religious communities. Yes, indeed. And the clearest example is perhaps found in the opinion polls. Whilst leaders of major religious traditions steadfastly maintain a public argument for traditional marriage, polling indicates that many, even a majority in the pews, supports a change to the traditional view on marriage. Well, tonight, we'll hear their voices from Christian, Jewish and even Muslim perspectives, the religious argument for same-sex marriage. During the week, a group of those from religious communities concerned to discuss the same-sex marriage debate from more than just the polemical two corners of the room decided to get together and see what they shared in common. Here's a little insight into events at Parliament House in Canberra during the week.
Look, people said to me, and I was so surprised, like they said, even just to hear a rabbi stand on the pulpit and say gay, lesbian, intersex, bisexual, you know, just to even have those words come from a rabbi in that sacred space was incredibly powerful. It was acknowledging and recognising a person for who they are and their story.
My Catholic Christian faith, it's first and foremost about love and justice. We live in a pluralistic, circular, multi-faith, multicultural society. The laws that are there for freedom of religion, it's there to as much protect people of religious background from people who might persecute them, but also protect other people, even within your own religious tradition, who might persecute you.
In our tradition, all Anglican priests are marriage celebrants, and all of them have the right to refuse to marry people. So we still have people in, even in our diocese, which is reasonably progressive diocese, who will not marry, remarry divorcees, and the legislation as it stands protects their right to say no. It just says basically there's nothing in this act that requires someone to marry anyone.
I strongly suspect my denomination, the Baptist Union of Victoria, will end up resolving the issue in exactly that way, by basically getting out of the civil marriage business altogether. I have a recurring nightmare about doing the paperwork wrong and that everyone ever married will be told one day that it's never actually been valid and that they've all been living in sin forever.
Here in Australia and New Zealand, there is no support from the Muslim leadership. And to add to that, there is very, very, very minimal support from the mainstream LGBT community. I mean, 3 years now. 3 years. And we run around begging for venues to meet up. And this is from the mainstream LGBT community. So if that's how the mainstream community is, why we shouldn't expect any worse from the Muslim leadership.
In the Orthodox Jewish community in Australia, you know, when they ask me to come in and talk about it, I say, no, I'm not going to talk about homosexuality. That's not even a word in the Torah. And I said, I'm going to talk to you about, you know, people with same gender lives. I'm going to talk to you about, you know, people with trans and or non-binary gender experiences and identities and ways of understanding. I'm going to talk to you about people born with intersex bodies. That's what I'm going to talk to you about, people first.
Voices from a gathering in Canberra this week at Parliament House to discuss religious perspectives on same-sex marriage. Subtleties indeed. And the clearest example, as I indicated earlier, are the opinion polls. Whilst leaders of major religious traditions steadfastly need to maintain a public argument for traditional marriage, at least they seem to, polling indicates that many, even a majority in the pews, support a change in the traditional view of marriage. Well, tonight we are going to hear from Christian, Jewish and even Muslim perspectives the religious arguments for same-sex marriage. It's a pleasure to welcome into our studios Rabbi Jackie Ninio of Emmanuel Synagogue in Woollahra in Sydney. Jacqueline, welcome.
Thank you.
In our Brisbane studios, the very Reverend Dr. Peter Catt, the Anglican Dean of Brisbane. Dr. Catt, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. It's good to be with you.
And on the telephone, Imam Noor Wasami, Australia's only openly gay imam. Imam Noor Wasami, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And also a pleasure to have in our studios the Human Rights Commissioner, Edward Santo. Edward, thanks so much for being here.
Good to be with you.
You're a person who has to straddle all sides of this debate and try and make sense of the sort of somewhat fraught edges of this. Are there deep and traditional issues in the whole area of human rights which are at play here?
Yeah, there are. Your intro began with a comment that this issue should be seen through the lens of love and justice. And I think that's a very useful way of looking at this. I'm a lawyer, so I have some abstract knowledge of love, but I know all about justice. Really, at the heart of human rights law is the idea that we must protect people's basic individual dignity. Now, that idea, that notion, is something that is absolutely fundamental to all of the world's major religions as well. So that is really the way in which we at the Human Rights Commission are looking at this issue.
You're saying you're starting from a shared heritage about the nature of the human person and what's the way the human person should operate in society.
That's exactly right. And indeed, many of the drafters and those most responsible for putting together the big international human rights treaties were people of faith. And so it's no coincidence that there really is a confluence of intellectual ideas that come together in human rights law.
There's another sort of deep and ancient tension here too, and that is the very nature of religious communities is about binding and understanding people. But many of those traditions that have lasted thousands of years have come under huge assault in the last century or so because of new understandings about science, biology, physics, all sorts of other things bear in on traditional frameworks that have held us for thousands of years. And I guess this is a constant issue in various areas of the law.
I think that's true, but going back to the first thing you said, I think precisely the sorts of things that can bind us together can be exactly the sorts of things that can tear us apart. In other words, we can be bound together by good, positive ideas, or we can be bound together by hatred and by, you know, identifying scapegoats. I guess I hope that our influence is to direct us more towards the former.
But there is also, coming to that latter part of what I was saying, the way in which the law, perhaps as much as any other institution, has had to cope with rapidly changing and evolving understandings of society in the last 100 years.
That's exactly right. And the law is a reflection of our society and its norms. It is never static. It is always changing. Our legislation changes many, many times every year. And the hope is that those changes simply reflect the way in which norms are developing and are crystallising in the modern day.
Where are we with the current marriage debate? As I understand it, there are a couple of private members' bills floating around.
Yes, so far in the last several months, we've been focusing almost exclusively on how we might resolve this, which is a funny place to start in some ways. It's now clear that there will not be a plebiscite, or at least not anytime soon. And so I think the government has done something which I think is very sensible, and that is to release its own exposure draft bill. That's just a kind of technical way of saying this is a real draft. They genuinely are asking for comments. The bill is pretty good, I think, is the view that many people are reflecting back to the Human Rights Commission. There are some elements that I think are very, very well drafted. There are some elements that perhaps could be improved in order to give clearer protection for religious freedom. And then there are some elements that could be improved to give clearer protection for LGBTI people. But on the whole, I think it's a very good first step, and it allows us to have a conversation on the substance as distinct from the procedure.
Well, let's talk about that conversation on the substance. Jackie Ninio, you were there in Canberra at Parliament House. They opened the doors and allowed you into a committee room to have the data. How many people were there, and what was the breadth of understanding? A couple of hundred, I understand?
I have no idea how many people were there. I'm sorry. But
about 100 or so?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe a bit less. Yeah. But I think that the power actually of the discussion partly was the place that it was held. But since then, there's been a lot of sort of media around what was discussed and the topics and issues. Because it was in Canberra, I think it's difficult for a lot of people to physically be there, but to have connected with the debates and the discussions that we had, I think, has been really powerful since then. And now we have the opportunity to come and talk with you. So
what was the sense you got from the gathering?
It was incredibly positive in favour of the government legislating for same-sex marriage. In many ways, we came from very similar positions, and in other places, it was kind of a different nuance in the argument and in the discussion. And I think many of the different groups were at different stages within their religious tradition of coming to a place where the sort of formal body was able to make pronouncements or statements or about the issue. But I think we heard from everyone the incredible emotion and the way that it really is about people. You know, I think sometimes we forget when we have these debates and discussions that it's actually people's lives, and there's a real human face to this this discussion and this debate, and we're talking about people and who they are and the essence of who they are. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's good that we're not having this plebiscite, because I think it would have opened the door perhaps to do a lot more damage in the name of doing good.
Yes, even within religious communities it would have created fissures and divisions rather than discussion and harmony.
Correct. And I think that, you know, we have a problem generally in the world about having debate and discussion with people with whom you disagree in a respectful and honourable way. And I think that this issue, as much as many of the others, you know, it's about people and their lives. And we heard some really powerful stories from participants who were there about the effect that it has had on people within communities, and how just having an open discussion and a respectful, honourable acknowledgement, as it said in that little piece at the beginning, of the LGBTQI members of these religious communities, and acceptance and embrace of the holiness and sanctity of who they are as much as anybody else is actually saving lives. It's not a small thing.
How would you say the debate's gone in the Jewish community? Does it reflect the way it has, say, in the wider Christian community, for example, where a few years ago you would have seen the debate couched in entirely different terms? And even now, as I indicated, opinion polls say that while leaders are generally holding to a fairly officially conservative position, many of those in the pews are basically moved on. And so that there's a bit of a disjunction. Not a conflict, but it's just there's the attitude in the pew seems to be rather more liberal than those in the centres of authority.
Well, definitely for my community that is the case, and I think that the leaders also within, definitely in the progressive and Masorti and renewal Jewish streams within our tradition, the leaders, everybody is saying we want a right to be able to conduct marriages between people. Marriage is about a relationship. It's not about the gender of the people involved. And even within some of the more traditional elements of Judaism, they make a very strong division between civil marriage and religious marriage. And they say there's no reason to not allow people to civilly be married. They might not want to do it in their synagogues, but that's not a reason to prevent people from having a civil ceremony. It's not the, you know, it's not all the religious leaders, but there are a number of them within the Orthodox communities as well who are saying civil marriage, allow it to happen, you know, and in each synagogue will decide for themselves what they, you know, where they stand and how they feel. And obviously my synagogue would be one of the first, we would hope to actually be able to conduct an official wedding as opposed to a commitment ceremony.
Noura Warsami, let me invite you into the conversation here. As Australia's only openly gay imam, I guess for you, the position in many Muslim communities and mosques is where perhaps the debate was for other religious communities in Australia 20 or 30 years ago. That is, the traditional view is still very strong, and it's very much a cultural as well as a religious view.
Correct, yes.
How then have you found the issue? I mean, how are you able to even talk about the issue? Where did you, for example, your status in the community as an imam, where were you trained, for example?
I was trained in Egypt and South Africa.
And through a traditional system, a mainstream system?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So how is it that the community, how do you see the community facing these sorts of issues in Australia at the moment?
Well, I think the community is progressing. However, there are leaders within the Muslim community who are still holding on to the old conservative ways of thinking, which are no longer relevant in our contemporary society. But the youth are, young educated youth are understanding it.
And do you see this as being an issue about the Quran and the teachings of the Prophet, or is it an issue more about culture and where people have been used to being?
I think it's about culture rather than the theology of Islam or the Quran and Hadith, because I have seen a lot of young, educated Muslim youth who are passionate about their faith and at the same time about their identity, who have a very different look at this discussion of marriage equality to what a conservative imam would look at it.
I'd like to come back to some of those issues in a few moments, because I do think that you would be facing particular challenges for young people who are gay and wish to express that, as let aside the issue of same-sex marriage. And I'll come back to that in just a moment, but let me go to Dean Peter Catt, the Anglican Dean of Brisbane, for a moment, because I guess the Anglicans, Peter, have been most open in their discussion about these issues, and there are quite strongly held different views. Would you say the groundswell on the ground, the pattern is shifting as it has in other communities?
It certainly has been a touchstone issue for the Anglican Communion over the last couple of decades. I'm very heartened by what's happening here in Brisbane at a local level. Learning some lessons from past ways we carried out debates, we've introduced a more dialogical approach to talking about issues as complex as the future of marriage and family life, and we're finding that that's reaping very huge rewards, in that people are learning to listen to each other rather than talk at each other. And as we go around the diocese holding these talking circles, we're finding that people are thinking very deeply about this issue. And many people have certainly decided that marriage equality is something that should be pursued, particularly at the secular level. How the various churches will negotiate that territory once that decision's made. But I'm finding that more and more people have friends and relatives who are living in same-sex relationships, and people are being converted by experience.
The same-sex issue, and particularly the way marriage is expressed there. You mentioned that, for example, many are coming to the position that civil marriage or a civil service is something that they'd be quite comfortable with. That is, it allows them not to get into the issue of the theology of their beliefs. It just says, look, we need to separate out the religious and the civil element of this. Marriage has always been around. It can be a civil service. There is always has been a civil element to it. And let's let that go ahead, and we won't have to deal with the theological side of it. Now, that's one issue, and probably one that's being sorted out more quickly than most. Is there also, though, a deeper debate going on about the theology of the church with regard to marriage?
Oh, there certainly is. Many people are looking firstly to the history of marriage, and there's increasing understanding that marriage has evolved over time, and even the church's approach and practice has evolved over time. And many of us are beginning to see that the church was reflecting in large measure cultural norms and giving that a theological gloss. And there's increasingly, I think, a view that same-sex marriage is theologically valid, because at the heart of marriage there's the understanding that it's all about love. And over the last 50 years or so, say, marriage has moved very much from being an institution to a celebration of relationship. And so the focus on love is getting more profound and deeper, I think. And so I think there are great theological reasons why the church will move towards celebrating marriage equality. But I think in Australia, that's going for our church, that's going to be a long road. So in the meantime, I think it's really important to affirm that people should be able to get married, at least in a secular way. And given that 71% of marriages carried out in Australia are not carried out in a religious context, I think the churches really just, and other religious groups really need to work out how they relate to the way the church, the way the community does marriage. And that was certainly one of the things that really struck me about our time together in Canberra, was listening to the various traditions talk about how their faith community relates to marriage as it's practiced by the state. And I was really impressed by the versatility and the agility that faith communities are exercising.
Edward Santo, is that something that that provides a way through for somebody like yourself as Human Rights Commissioner in this, that one can actually see faith communities divorcing themselves from, and seeing that there are actually two ceremonies here or two ways of approaching this, and one can move ahead on the civil front without necessarily creating difficulties on the religious front?
I think that is one way of addressing the issue, and I think our Marriage Act already makes it really clear that any religious minister will not be required to solemnise a marriage that they see as being contrary to their religious beliefs. But I think there's another point as well, and that is that just as the religious approach to what marriage means has changed over time, so too has the law. Really, it was not that long ago that marriage between different ethnic groups, even in a country like Australia, was subject to very strict legal restrictions, and certainly in other countries as well. So I don't think it's helpful to see marriage as subject to an immutable definition. I think rather we need to consider, in accordance with the values and principles of the age in which we live, what marriage should mean.
And for the Jewish community too, Jackie, is that route via the civil marriage first, realising it's separate from the religious marriage, a way through for people to actually begin to accommodate themselves to this, to say, well, look, yeah, okay, we'll allow a secular society to do what it wants, but we here within our faith community will reserve our rights to do things the way we wish to do it?
I think for a part of the Jewish community, that's the case. But for the part of the Jewish community from which I come, we actually see it as very, very important and crucial that the two are able to be married together, if you'll excuse the expression. I find very deep religious teachings for me that give me the grounding within my religion to say this is the right and just thing to do. For me, I go to the creation of human beings, and I understand that we're created in the image of God. That's what the Torah tells us. And I believe that our sexuality is part of the way that we are created, part of that image and mirror of God within us. And then we're told a couple of sentences later, human beings were not meant to be alone. We're meant to be in relationship and to find a partner to walk beside us
in life. So you think the theological argument is a really important one, not just for churches, but for everyone. That is, this understanding of who and what we are in relationship to each other is a really important thing that really goes to the heart of the tradition in some ways.
For me, it's very important, yeah, and I think it's central to why I want to stand in a holy, sacred Jewish ceremony and be able to bring people together in marriage. Right now, I can stand with many different configurations of couples and celebrate moments in their life. I can celebrate the birth of a child, I can celebrate an anniversary, I can celebrate all kinds of things, but I can't do this ceremony because right now the civil law doesn't allow me to do that. And so in some ways I feel that my freedom to do a religious ceremony is actually being curtailed by this situation in secular law. But I think in some ways bringing religion into this argument has muddied the waters a little bit, you know. So within my synagogue, I want the ability to be able to do that. There are other synagogues who would come to a different conclusion based on the same texts and the same traditions, but they are not being required to do this. That, you know, just in the same way there are people that I would do a religious wedding for that other Jewish rabbis would not, it would be the same situation. So I don't see why one should prevent the other.
Reverend Peter Catt, do you think there's an important theological argument that needs to be pursued here?
Oh, absolutely. I think at its heart, marriage is a celebration of love, and I think anyone who, any two people who wish to express that love should be allowed to celebrate it in a public and a sacred way. I'm certainly very keen for the church to explore more deeply the theology of marriage as it's becoming. Marriage is an evolving sacrament and an evolving relationship, and I think the theological trajectory is certainly taking us towards the point where the churches, and there are Anglican churches in other parts of the world that have already made this journey and are celebrating same-sex marriages. So I just think in Australia we're going to have a tough time of it because it's become the flashpoint issue that divides the church into its particular political groups. But
well, it's also played as part of the secular culture war too, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is. And so, everything that Jackie said, I absolutely agree with in terms of the theology of marriage. And I think it's something way beyond gender. And if people can find someone who they can commit their lives to and who will nurture them and help them to become the person they're meant to be, and if we can find ways to celebrate that in public and in sacred places, I think that just adds to social amenity, makes society far more stable, and is better for everybody. So, you know, at its heart, it's about human flourishing.
Is there another couple of issues here too, just briefly? The old slavery debate moved on because of an increased awareness and understanding of the theology of human persons and all of that. But here, too, you have something else bearing on it, that is the scientific understanding about what constitutes a person, what constitutes the nature of their sexuality, how sex is determined, all of those things. So they're
they bear on this debate as well.
They sure do, and our diocese is actually in the process of engaging all of those different disciplines in the conversation. And as I said before, people largely are converted by experience, and because now we have so many people who are feeling comfortable about living as they are, as they truly are, in the relationships that give them allow them to flourish. People just learn from experience that these relationships are good for people, they're good for families, and so people just get converted by experience. It's exactly what happened in the church with the ordination of women. There were people who theologically couldn't make the leap to accept the ordination of women, who, after the fact, through experience, having experienced the incredible ministry of ordained women, decided that it had to be of God because it was just so good. And you know, I think the God who creates good things, if we see goodness and we see people in love and we see people flourishing, then we have to say, well, therein is the work of God.
You're on Sunday nights on ABC Radio through Radio Australia via the web to the world. We're talking same-sex marriage, those religious communities who find it within themselves that they wish to support same-sex marriage. 1-300-800-222 is the number to call if you'd like to participate in this discussion. Our guests are the Human Rights Commissioner, Edward Santo, Imam Noor Wasami, Australia's openly gay imam, Rabbi Jackie Ninio of Emmanuel Synagogue in Woollahra, and the Reverend Peter Catt, the Anglican Dean of Brisbane. Imam Nuwasami, let me come to you and speak of the stresses you find in a community that still is largely in denial of these issues. A lot of the time, I guess you would be dealing with young people who find themselves in positions of stress and looking for a faith community to help them at the very time they need most help, when the doors are closed most firmly.
Correct, yes. I mean, globally, there is change that's happening. We're seeing change. If you ask the question, why is this change happening, or the want for change, it's because, primarily, in my opinion, our youth are lacking confidence. And people generally want a way out. And in particular, especially in my community. So I think we are in blessed times. And the concept of mercy is what comes to mind when discussing the topic of marriage equality, because in Islam, every chapter of the Quran, almost every chapter of the Quran, starts with God, the merciful one. And if we have a law that prevents love from happening, then it's no longer mercy, and it contradicts the basic message of what Islam is.
What sort of support do you have for the views you are offering today? And I'm not suggesting officially, but unofficially, broadly in the Muslim community today in Australia.
Look, I am optimistic. There is a large number of young intellectual youth in our community who are wanting to be agents for this change to happen, because for change to happen, it requires agents. But from the organized structures in the Muslim community, there's none.
And, for you yourself, are you offering counseling services, or do you find there are counseling services appropriate for young Muslim people in this situation?
So I have been very thankful and blessed and humbled to have found resources. So I refer people on from our community who are struggling with issues of mental health, of addiction, of homelessness, of unemployment. And I found some very good people, kind-hearted people who are not Muslim in the mainstream community, who are willing to help these youngsters transition safely.
You're on Sunday nights. Time to take your calls. let's say hi to Barry in Mount Isa. Barry, thanks for joining us. Welcome.
Hello from Mr. Barry Byrne in Mount Isa, Northwest Queensland.
Barry, what would you like to say?
Hello. Yes, and I'd just like to say hello to your panel as well. It's nice to find people of religious bent who are a bit more understanding and sympathetic of people who have a different sexual orientation to what might be classified the average normal person. But because I've been aware of my homosexuality ever since I was 5 years old. Not that I've really had many relationships as such, but so it's just nice to know that there are people out there in the religious community who are a bit more understanding and accepting. But I'd just like to say, when it comes to same-sex marriage and things of that nature, I'm not a religious person. I'm quite secular. I've always had a perception that marriage is more an act of the state than of religion. But I generally find that if you're going to have an accepting community, and I use the word accepting, I don't like the word tolerant, if you're going to have an accepting community, whether it be secular or religious, you've got to embrace people of all types, because none of us are all exactly the same, and there's more difference in this world than there is sameness. And so, I mean, you've just got to be prepared to be accepting and understanding and, for lack of a better word, loving.
Barry, thank you for your view. I think you've summarised your situation very well. We'll move on. Thanks, Barry. Barry from Mount Isa there. Let's go to Western Australia, to Bob in Western Australia. Hi, Bob. What would you like to say?
Good evening, John and everyone. Yeah, I was wondering, instead of a plebiscite that of the whole population, whether like federal politicians elected, state politicians elected, local government politicians elected, had the plebiscite, and then we moved on from there.
How would that differ? Why are you suggesting it that way?
Well, you know, instead of the whole population being, surely those people elected to every level of government in our country would be qualified to give an opinion. That's how I, you know, well, that's, yeah. Anyhow, that's just a personal opinion.
Yeah. With the Human Rights Commission on this, you have to get dragged into a million arguments on this. The whole way in which, for example, you had a former High Court Justice argue that the whole idea of a plebiscite should be anathema to our constitutional frameworks in Australia anyway. We're a representative democracy and people need to understand what we are as a democracy, let alone get into a... So threading all the way through this for the Human Rights Commission must have been fairly difficult. What for you are the key elements that come out in negotiating your way through these difficulties?
There are perhaps three key points. The first one, I guess, gets to how we resolve this issue. A general principle of international human rights law is that these principles are not best resolved through a majoritarian process. I think we could all imagine a situation where you're, something that is absolutely fundamental to your identity is being asked of the entire population to vote on. That would be a very, very difficult proposition indeed. The second principle, I guess, is the substantive one. What does international human rights law tell us about this issue? And it's not a simple question at all. But essentially what it tells us is that there's a kind of a growing consensus that there should be marriage equality, provided that freedom of religion is maintained. And then the third principle, which is absolutely as important as the rest, is that, to use Rabbi Nino's language before, we need to find a way to have a respectful and honourable discussion on this issue. We can't use this issue, which people rightly have very, very strong views on. We can't allow that issue to kind of tear us apart and to lead to very significant harm, particularly for vulnerable people.
What about the fringe argument you hear, you know, about the person who doesn't want to bake a wedding cake for those who are going to get married at a gay wedding ceremony because he happens to be a conservative Christian and doesn't believe in that? That's the sort of argument that's brought up. Let's put aside religion. Let's just talk about the ordinary man in the street. And that usually is the sort of the argument that's dragged across the path.
I think it's a bit of a red herring. I mean, I think it surprises me how much time we spend talking about the bakers at the wedding. Having been married once myself, we gave relatively little concern to the religious affiliation or interests of the bakers. Of course, there are some important issues there about where you draw the line, about where someone can engage in what would otherwise be unlawful discrimination. But I don't want that issue to kind of cloud what is far and away the central issue.
That can be settled in a different arena.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Taking your calls on Sunday night to Joan in Melbourne. Hello, Joan.
Good evening to you all. Look, I'm not against same-sex marriage, not at all. But in reality, in same-sex marriage, there will be divorce, as in other relationships. And I haven't heard the word children mentioned tonight. And all I can say is that, from my point of view, having a husband who died when I had teenage boys, we had a balance in their lives. And when he died, I could drive them to their sporting things. I could drive them to their surf clubs. I could do things like that for them. But there are other things I couldn't do for them, as far as I was concerned. And so sometimes, as I said, if there'd been a plebiscite, I would have voted for it. I'm not against that. But sometimes I think to myself, well, two guys that have got a little girl or two women have got a little boy, sometimes perhaps it's okay if they've got a loving family around them with people of that opposite sex that can be in their lives. But that is just one thing I think about, to be honest.
Mm. Jackie, do you want to have a comment on that? Or?
Sure. I think that families come in many different, different ways, and I think that the marriage debate and the marriage argument, you know, the discussion is actually about celebrating, sanctifying, connecting two people in marriage. It's not actually about children. We find what children need is a loving, beautiful home, and I'm really sorry for you for your loss, and it must have been incredibly difficult to raise two children on your own. But there are many people in that situation. There are many people, you know, with many configurations of family, you know, and after divorces and remarriages and all kinds of things. And so I think what everything is showing is that children need a loving, supportive group of people around them. They need parents, and I think regardless of gender, I don't think gender actually affects that. There are ways to bring a community around a child in lots of different ways, and all the research and things has shown that children with two parents of the same gender are equally as loved and as cherished and have thrive in the world in exactly the same way.
And it doesn't affect their sexual orientation.
Not at all.
No. Thank you for your call, Joan. We must move on. Lots of calls on the board this evening. Let's try going back to Nathan, who rang us earlier. Hi, Nathan. How are you?
How are you going?
Yeah, very good. Sorry about that earlier.
Oh, that's okay. I was just been listening. I'm not a biblical scholar. I'm not what you'd call a Talmud Chacham, a smart scholar. But I just think you've fractured some of the psukim, some of the verses.
Oh, really?
I'm listening to you guys, and it doesn't ring true.
Which bits?
I wish I had a Torah in front of me or a Chumash in front of me. From the book of Genesis, you see, the rabbi quoted, Rabbi Jackie quoted quoted, but Selam Elohim Nivra Ha'adam, man was created in God's image. But then it goes on to say he created man and woman, women and woman. It sounds like a bit of a fractured posuk, a fractured verse.
Well, there are two bits. There are two bits in Genesis, aren't there? There's a couple of stories in Genesis. Peter Katt, perhaps you first, and then we'll allow Rabbi Jackie back into it.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Peter Katt.
Yeah, thank you. I think Jackie was on the money when she said that humanity was created in God's image, male and female, and that we were not meant to be alone. Certainly the story about not being alone is starts with Adam, but Eve comes along, and I think it's the principle of not being alone that was being answered in that particular trope. So I think Jackie's on the money, and I think that we flourish in relationship. We know we flourish in relationship, and it's something that's essential to our nature, and that's why it's in the creation story.
Mm. Jackie.
And it doesn't say anything there about only male with only female. It says I created people. And, you know, I think that a lot of times the people who get left out of these discussions are, you know, the transgender community, the intersex community. And I think there's also another discussion not connected with marriage equality about gender and what gender is and what that says about us or doesn't say about us. And I think that for me it's all about the relationships between people, and there are scholars who say that the first human was actually male and female. Adam wasn't male and then female was created. It was Adam was male and female together, and then God split that human in half and created two different genders in that moment.
We've only got 2 or 3 minutes left. I'd like to say, to get some suggestions about where you think this is going within the various communities and what you hope for, and then we might finish with a roundup on the human rights question from Ed Santa, our human rights commissioner, who's with us this evening. But if I could go first to Imam Noor, within the Muslim community, are discussions taking place even quietly behind the scenes that you are hopeful about?
Yes. Ever since the unfortunate Orlando incident happened, there has been global interest from the mainstream Muslim communities who have never been supportive of the LGBTIQ+ issue. One example is even the group of Islamic communities that went on the Pride March in London after the Orlando massacre. So there is discussions, there is a shift happening globally.
And it will take some years for it to filter through here to Australia, or are you seeing the beginnings of it here?
I hope it doesn't take 20 to 30 years.
But you're optimistic that you'll see it within your term of service to the community.
I think it was Gramsci who said, "I am pessimistic by my observations, but optimistic by my actions."
Noor Wassami, Imam Noor Wassami, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday night.
It's been great to
have you. Jackie Nidio, the Jewish community you've mentioned, that changes are happening. At the official level, discussions going on, are there theological debates, and how are decisions arrived at ultimately?
I think within the progressive community, those debates and discussions took place a long time ago, and I think we're pretty secure in our position, our understanding that marriage is not about gender, it's about a relationship. It can be between two people of the same gender, of different gender. And interestingly, I think in progressive Judaism, we removed any distinction based on gender in our prayer. You know, women can be rabbis, men and women pray together. And so it seems wholly logical that this is the next step, and we're looking forward to that happening in the secular world so that we can start to perform marriages in our synagogues.
Peter Capp, I'm going to have to cut you short, very short. I guess the debate in the Anglican Church will continue.
It will, sure.
And I guess it will change as quickly as a generation, or perhaps even faster.
I think so, and I my hope is that the respectful sort of dialogical processes that are happening in our diocese and in other dioceses will spin into larger and larger circles and embrace whole dioceses and then the national church.
Ed Zand, I'm sorry, we've only got 10 seconds. I just have to say thank you. It's been great to have your wisdom with us tonight.
It's been a pleasure.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.